We wrote that in like even the first edition, and we talked about that, but that kind of got lost in a lot of people. They were like, well, gosh, I did my 20-minute test and I subtracted 5%, and it's still really high compared to what I can do for an hour. And, you know, they just kind of forgot the fact that, well, you really need to do these other tests first. And if you don't do that, at least do a 5-minute, you know, where you just blow it out for 5 minutes.
That Triathlon Show 184. Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host, Michael, and on today's episode, I interview Hunter Allen, who is back for a repeat interview. Hunter was first on the show back in episode 103, so definitely go and check that out after listening to this one if you missed that when it was out. But for those of you who are not familiar, just quickly, Hunter is the head coach and founder of Peaks Coaching Group, and he is famously the co-author, together with Dr. Andrew Coggan and Dr. Stephen McGregor, of arguably the most widely recognized cycling training book in the world, which is Training and Racing with a Power Meter. So Hunter and his colleagues have now released the third edition of this book to keep up to date with the recent developments in that field. And he joins us here to discuss Training and Racing with a Power Meter updated for 2019. So that is both the book, but of course, more so the concept of Training and Racing with a Power Meter. Before we get into the interview, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. They make electrolyte supplements that match how you sweat, and that's made them official partners of, for example, Hoetroot and Olympic athletes like Ashton Eaton and Stuart Hayes, as well as team sports clubs like Wolverhampton Wanderers in the English Premier League. So they have a lot of great things going on. Check them out on their website, precisionhydration.com, and take their free online sweat test to get an individualized hydration strategy for you, and use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps, to get your first box or tube for free. And thank you to Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Roka makes wetsuits, dry suits, buoyancy shorts and goggles, and high performance eyewear as well. And I love all of Roka's products, but if I have to pick one, then I would definitely pick the Roka Maverick X wetsuit, because it's just so ridiculously fast. I recently raced in Challenge Lisbon, so that's a half-distance race, and I had a breakthrough swim, really. I was the sixth male, amateur male, out of the water, 16th male if we include the pros as well, when usually in races of that size I have been around the 30th or something like that after the swim leg. And sure, it's definitely mostly due to consistent, structured, and effective training. That's where the 90% or 95% of that improvement comes from. But every last second counts, and I'm sure that using the Roka Maverick X wetsuit, as well as the R1 goggles, which makes my sighting quite a bit more effective, and I lose less momentum each time I sight, I guess that equipment configuration, I would estimate, gives me 2 seconds per 100 meters or so, compared even to my previous best equipment configuration that I've had in races. And that is a lot. It's 40 seconds or so. And whether your goal is the overall podium or a personal best for the distance for you yourself, and you're not interested in placements, that makes a significant difference when you can take almost 1 minute off with better equipment. So whether you're looking for a wetsuit, tri suit, or goggles, or high-performance eyewear, check them out on roka.com and get 20% off your entire order with the promo code TTS, all caps. So without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Hunter Allen. Welcome to That Triathlon Show, Hunter Allen.
Hey, well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have you back, and it's a timely interview with timing with the book release of Training and Racing with a Power Meter. The third edition has happened pretty recently, and for those listeners that didn't catch your last interview on the show, by the way, that's episode 103, so people can go and check that episode out as well. But just to start off, can you give us a brief introduction of who you are for people that may not know you.
Sure. I'm Hunter Allen. I'm the co-author of Training and Racing with a Power Meter. This is the third edition, and also was the co-developer of WKO software and co-founder of Training Peaks software. Then I also own Peaks Coaching Group. So I've been working coaching athletes now for over 20 years and been at the forefront of Training with a Power Meter since we launched Cycling Peaks software, which was the original Training Peaks WKO back in 2003. So it's been a lot of fun and hopefully helped a lot of people.
Yeah, cool. And what is what are the main things that you do these days? Is it mostly the Peaks coaching group stuff, the coaching and camps, or are you still involved with Training Peaks WKO somehow?
No. I sold all my equity out of Training Peaks and a couple of years ago, and so now just doing Peaks Coaching Group, which is really fun. It's something that I've been doing for the whole time, and we have 50 coaches now, and we do camps, 6-7 camps around the country and world. And at the same time, we also coach athletes all the way from beginners to riders in the Tour de France, World Championships, Ironman, Kona, everything you can imagine.
Yeah, that sounds great. And we'll, of course, link to that and people can go and check out the camps, for example. We're talking about some potential new camps that you have coming up that I won't disclose here because I don't know if that's official yet. But you have camps in many different exciting locations, so people can go and have a look on the website and keep following that. So let's talk about the third edition now, the new edition of Training and Racing with a Power Meter, which is one of the classic books in endurance sports, in cycling and triathlon. Just give us an overview of what the book is about, aside from the obvious Training and Racing with a Power Meter, and who it is for.
Sure, absolutely. So this has been a big evolution, and it's been 10 years since we came out with the second edition, which is kind of mind-boggling when we started thinking about it. Wow, 10 years. Things haven't changed a tremendous amount in 10 years, and the second edition really stood the test of time. And but we have had some changes, and so a couple of those things have been that there's been some new software changes where now we can use that software, and this is the new version of WKO, to create some new metrics. So we have some new metrics that have come out, some advances in power training. And we have new power meters that have come out, left and right power meters. So now power meters measure independently left and right. And then we've got a new chapter on, a revised chapter on triathlon, a new training plan for triathletes. I've got a training plan and a new case study for masters riders, for riders over 35, 40. We've got a bunch of new workouts, and really went through a lot of the workouts. People love the workouts that are in the appendix and get tons of emails and thank yous for all those. So we've got some great new workouts in there as well. So it's pretty big review. So and new edition.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool that you have the like workouts and training plans in there to bring together the theory and the practical application of it, which is always important, and not leave the reader with just this is the theory, but now what? But you actually have the now what in there as well. That's really great. So if we approach this first from a few different angles, and starting with the beginners to power-based training, is this book applicable for beginners that maybe just got their first power meter and don't know a lot about it? And how do you recommend that they, I guess, consume the content in the book? Should it just be read cover to cover, or is there a different approach depending on your level?
Right. Great question. So it really is made for all levels. So if you've just bought a power meter or even thinking about buying a power meter, this is the perfect book for you, because the first four chapters into the fifth chapter as well is really all about like, oh, wow, I just bought a power meter. Now what do I do with it? And what are the steps that I have to take in order to actually use this thing? So those are the basic core principles of power training. And, so things like finding your training zones. What is your functional threshold power? What are your strengths and weaknesses? How to actually go out and do some training and do some workouts using your power meter, and then some analysis of this. So that's the great thing is that, like, wow, if you just read the first 4.5-5 chapters, then you're training with a power meter. You're doing it. And then after, you know, using that power meter for a little while, it's like, okay, now what do I do with all this information? And what do these squiggly lines mean? And so that's really what the next chapters are about, is understanding those squiggly lines. How do we analyze this data? And then how do we build a training plan so that you peak when you want to peak? So each chapter kind of builds on itself, takes you through as a beginner all the way to the end. And then for the advanced user, I mean, we've got some really advanced concepts in here that people who've been using power meters for years that will really appreciate some of these advanced concepts as well. And looking at, wow, what is gross power released on the left leg versus the right leg if you're using an independent bilateral power meter. So it really goes all the way from okay, what do I do with this? To here's some really advanced concepts that gets that other 0.1% out of you.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. And for those advanced users, you mentioned a few of the metrics that you have that are now available in the new WKO version, so WKO 4. When you talk about the metrics that the advanced users can get into, does that require basically using WKO 4, or can the advanced users get a lot out of the book without necessarily using WKO 4, but just looking at, for example, training peaks data or wherever they review their workouts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that for the advanced users, I mean, it really is something that allows you to dig even deeper because again, there are some new metrics like what we call functional reserve capacity, all of the work that you do above your FTP. We have some really cool stuff again with that left-right pedaling data. We've got some other things in there that the science behind. Well, what is stamina? What actually how do you define stamina? We've always talked about it in kind of a obtuse, nebulous way. Like, well, it's this kind of a thing, but now we really start to define what stamina is. And looking at,
can you define it for us? Because I don't know what the definition for that is, really. I just see it in WKO4.
Right, sure. So stamina. So we have a curve that's called the power duration curve. So when we look at all of your data, once we've collected enough data, there's a curve that's created, and it's the curve of your bests. So what is your best for 5 seconds? For 8 seconds? For 2 minutes? For 20 minutes? For 4 hours? And what's your best wattage for that? And that curve we call the mean maximal power curve. Mean being average, maximal being best. So average best power curve. Then we came up with a curve that fits that. So we did a mathematical fit of that curve, and that's called the power duration curve. It looks at all the points along what you actually did and says, well, okay, you can do more here. You can do and how do we find the optimal place for you to train? It tells us a couple of different things. What, automatically helps us to understand what kind of a rider you are. It looks at the change in the slope of the curve at different areas. So stamina is the ability to continually produce power after an hour. So an hour we know is your functional threshold power. That's our our standard definition. You go out and do as best you can for an hour. That's going to be your FTP. But what happens afterwards? Like, how fast does your power degrade? How much does it go down afterwards? If you hold 200 watts for an hour, and then at 2 hours you can only hold 100 watts, wow, massive degradation in power. So your stamina is not very high. And so it looks at the slope of that line out there. And if you didn't have any degradation, let's say you did 200 watts for the rest of your life, never fatigued, right? Of course, impossible. But then your stamina would be 100. You know, it would be perfect, right? You never fatigue. And so if you degraded by 100 watts, half of that in 2 hours, then it'd probably be around 50. So that's what it looks at, is every hour after that, how much is the slope of that line? What is that slope, and how much the percentage decrease occurs? So most of us are around the 60 to 70 to 80 range. When I see somebody who's got incredible stamina and their power doesn't decrease much at all from 1 hour out to 5 hours or something, you might see that they're in their like 87 range or something like this. So that's really what stamina is.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect definition. And I think that really helps a lot of people that may be using WCO, because there you can see it, it's automatically calculated, but, probably a lot of other people like myself haven't been able to tell exactly what it measures. Like, yeah, we know what it's supposed to measure, but how does it measure it? So that was a very helpful explanation and I guess makes it more concrete to understand what we're actually looking at and why it's useful. And the other thing that I was going to follow up on there was that when you mentioned the different testing methods, setting your zones, your threshold, and all those things. So that's something that I wanted to dig into a little bit. Like, how do you recommend now currently people actually test their threshold or their different, maximum power numbers for different durations? What's the protocol that you recommend these days?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really like that our normal, what we call our power profile test. I mean, it's really stood the test of time. It's still very valid. But, you know, I've had some changes in some of my thinking over the years as we learn more and I learn more. And so one of the things that I really like to do now is it's really important to do the 1 minute test first. All right. So your 1 minute is your anaerobic ability. So it is the ability to go as hard as you can for a short period of time, producing a lot of power. Now, that's the greatest when you're fresh. So when you first warm up, you want to do that test first and get rid of that aerobic ability. And that's then when you get a really good number. And then two, it's like, okay, we get rid of some of that freshness. Secondly, then I want to do some sprints, because then during the neuromuscular power, short, small ring sprints, a little bit longer, big ring sprints. Then we see what we call your neuromuscular power, your best 5 seconds, or what in our new book we call it PMAX. So that's a great test. And then do the 5 minute test, which is your VO2 max. And then that really helps us to understand how much power, how many watts can you produce while at your VO2 max. Finally, then you do your FTP test. Now, the purpose of doing these three tests before, one, you know, you got, okay, we're fresher and we always do shorter intensity when we're fresher. But two, it's also to pre-fatigue you a little bit. So, because what we've done is we've, you know, okay, an hour is the gold standard for that FTP test, but it's hard to do an hour, especially on a regular basis. So we cut that down to 20 minutes. And if you do the 20 minutes and you don't actually do at least a 5 minute test beforehand, then your 20 minute is really inflated. And it could be inflated as much as 10%. But if you do the 1 minute, the sprints, the 5 minute before, then do the 20 minute test, then all of a sudden now that 20 minute, you still got to knock about 5% off of it. But it's a much more accurate number and closer to what you're going to be able to maintain for an hour.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's something that we've been talking about recently on the podcast quite a lot, on testing. And I use a couple of different methods to test my athletes. I use a software called Inside, which has the same sort of thing, like sprint test, 5 or 4 minute test, and 20 minute test. And that's one way of testing. But then for athletes that don't use that, with the classic FTP test, what I've done is that I haven't really done all of those other tests before, and rather adjust the correction factor, I guess, to 90% instead of 95 to get a more more accurate or more realistic estimate of the threshold. But what you're saying there, if you have actually done all those tests before, then that should pre-fatigue you enough, probably, that 95% might make a lot more sense. Because I just think that one of the most common mistakes that I see people make in training is that in cycling training and triathlon cycling is having too high an FTP as a basis for their training and doing everything a bit too hard, but not necessarily doing enough work at given intensities or at given intensity levels, if you know what I mean. But what you described there, that should also, I think, definitely make sure that problem doesn't really occur. So I like that.
Yeah. And, you know, and we wrote that in like even the first edition, and we talked about that, but that kind of got lost in a lot of people. They were like, well, gosh, I did my 20-minute test and I subtracted 5%, and it's still really high compared to what I can do for an hour. And, you know, they just kind of forgot the fact that, well, you really need to do these other tests first. And if you don't do that, at least do a 5-minute, you know, where you just blow it out for 5 minutes, hard as you can go, get rid of that anaerobic capacity. If you don't want to do the 1 minute in the sprints that day, well, and you just want to do your FTP, you still got to do the 5-minute, then do the 20-minute minus 5%. And again, it's going to be more accurate.
Yeah. What sort of recovery in between those various tests would you use in that testing protocol?
Yeah, so the 1 minute, you need some good recovery between that and the sprint. So at least a solid 10 minutes of just kind of cruising around, because you're going to use some of that. You want that phosphocreatine system to recover. You're not going to use a tremendous amount of that in your sprints, but you're going to use a little bit of that. And then between each sprint, and I recommend usually 2 to 3 sprints just to make sure that you're getting better and better. And a lot of times when I see the third sprint actually be your best sprint, a solid 5 minutes between those, and then a good 5 minutes between that, maybe 10 minutes between that and the 5-minute interval. Now, once you've done the 5-minute interval, you should be pretty solidly warmed up by this time. And you've also kind of gotten yourself into a rhythm at the end of that 5-minute interval with a high heart rate. So you don't want to lose that rhythm. So don't take really any more than 5 minutes after the 5-minute test before you start your 20, because then you end up just, well, I got to find that rhythm again, kind of get warmed up and get out of that fight or flight syndrome. So I like to only take 5 minutes after that.
Okay. One of the chapters that you mentioned there was about then going out and starting to train with your power meter. And something that I think is always an important topic is how to use power and heart rate in training. So what's your take on that? How do you use power and heart rate together? And are there situations when you prioritize one over the other? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. So I still think heart rate's an important metric, right? It still has importance. Number one, it is what I call the intensity of your intention. So it is how hard are you trying? Right. So if somebody emails me a power file and the power number, the wattage goes up to 250 watts and stays there for an hour and then comes down, you know, I don't know if that was their FTP. I don't know if that was riding at their just endurance pace. I have no clue. But if they send me a power file, it goes to 250 watts and goes back down, and then their heart rate goes to 180 and stays there for the entire hour, well, I know that they were probably riding at their FTP. They were trying really hard. And so it's the intensity of your intention, number one. Number two, it is a good indicator of, well, it tells us a little bit about how the body's reacting to the training stimulus itself, because it is the response. Power is the training dose, and that is the response. So, okay, if your heart rate's not coming up, well, possibly you had some fatigue. Maybe you didn't sleep that great the night before. Quite possibly, you know, it's you know, whatever. There's other things in the environment are going on. We also see the heart rate elevating towards the end of the ride, and there's a little metric that's pretty fun to use called heart rate decoupling, and basically it looks at the first half of the ride and the relationship between power and heart rate. And then it compares that relationship between power and heart rate to the second half of the ride. And it says, well, gosh, you know, if that heart rate decoupling number is 20%, that means that the heart rate has gone up by 20% in the second half of the ride and as a relationship, as it relates to power, as compared to the first half of the ride. So you may still be doing 200 watts for the full, or 250 watts for the full hour, but now in the second half of that hour, the last 30 minutes, you actually had to ride with your heart rate at 20% higher in order to do that same 250 watts, which could indicate fatigue. It could indicate you're just not that fit right now aerobically. It could indicate you're dehydrated. So there's lots of things that heart rate still apply and make a difference for.
And that's an interesting metric, actually, and we do get quite some questions about it. What's a good benchmark, if there is one, assuming that you hydrate well and everything, and it's a fairly steady ride? Like, is there a test almost, you should go out and ride steady for a certain duration, and you should see that heart rate decoupling should stay below a certain percentage? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I look at it, especially in the beginning of the season when athletes are building their fitness. And that's when I really put a lot of emphasis on it, because what it does is it helps to tell me when the athlete should start training more intensely, when their aerobic base is built enough. So if you go out and you do a 3-hour ride, and you really can't look at this metric unless it's longer than a 2.5-hour ride, and it's got to include some solid tempo efforts at 80%, maybe an hour of tempo even. It's great for, that 3-hour, 3.5-hour long ride. And then when I see that number over 5%, then I know that they still have more aerobic fitness that they need to gain. I look at it at two different places. I want to get it to less than 10%, because then I know, okay, they're really ready to do more intervals now. They're ready to do more intensity. They can ride right at their FTP. They can do VO2 max type work. They can do anaerobic work. Their aerobic base is built. But then I'm trying to get it down to that 5% number or less, because then I really know, wow, we're maximizing basically your aerobic system at that point. So yes, I look at it that way.
Perfect. Okay. Some of the topics, a select number of topics that I wanted to dive into a little bit here. First, you mentioned case studies and training plans for masters and triathlon. So can you describe a little bit for these two demographics, how does cycling training differ compared to cycling training for non-masters, non-triathletes in general, and separately, because these are different demographics. Like if we take triathletes as one and then masters cyclists as the other demographic, but what differences do you make in if you have coaching clients, for example, that you coach of these different demographics?
Well, of course, number one, we're always worried about recovery. So as we age, we don't recover as quickly as we did when we're 20 years old anymore. And that's just normal. And so I think that we're always looking at recovery and making sure that, we're getting enough of that recovery in. So number one, depending on your age, how many workouts per week can you do? Effective workouts. Can you do, two during the week, maybe Tuesday and Thursday, and then a really good strong one on the weekend? Maybe that's Saturday or maybe that's Sunday. So I think that that's a really critical piece to make sure that we've got enough time between the workouts themselves. And then, I really want to make sure that I'm giving them a rest week, after 3 weeks, sometimes even after 2 weeks. Other athletes may be able to go 4 weeks, and that's just built into the plan. So we need to make sure that there's rest weeks. Now, for triathletes, we're trying to train three different sports, so it's very difficult to make sure that we're getting enough rest in, because it is a lot of training to be done there. But the same principle applies in the fact that you're not as young as you used to be, and it does take more time to recover. So you just don't want to go overdo it. And so we need to make sure that the intensity is very early in the week when you're freshest. And then we can taper off that intensity towards later in the week when you become fatigued. But watching carefully what that is. There's a metric that we use in the performance manager chart we call the acute training load. And the acute training load is the training that you have done in the past 7 days. It really represents your fatigue. So how sore are my muscles right now based on what I've done in the last 7 days? And we can adjust that from, you know, to take into account your fatigue. So we've got some guidelines in there to how do we adjust the acute training load constants in order to say, oh, you know, we're not recovering as fast as we used to. Let's make sure that we still are recovering enough that we're going to be able to do the workouts that we want to do.
Right. So are you saying actually that, and this is something that can probably be, the constant can be changed in training peaks, right? So for the masters yes. users, they might use a different constant to then be able to follow the acute training load chart the same way that they're used to using it, but it will now be scaled to their different recovery needs.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Yep, exactly. And when you mentioned the workouts, the Tuesday, Thursday, and the weekend one, were those like the main workouts, the harder ones, or just workouts in general in the week? I didn't quite understand how you approached that. Were those the key workouts or just in general workouts in the week?
Yeah, I mean, during the week, I like to do those key workouts during that time because, one, most of us have less time to train during that time. So it's like, okay, gosh, I can get out for an hour and a half or 2 hours or maybe 2.5 hours and really focus and push myself. So that's the time when I schedule my athletes most intensity during that period. And that, again, that may be something that it just depends on the athlete. What do they really need? For a triathlete, that may be, let's just improve your FTP. For somebody else, it may be we need to focus on your sprint. It really just makes it just depends on, again, what your goals are.
Yeah. Okay. And speaking of improving FTP, I know that, I think I saw that you have that as a section of workouts and training plans. Actually, it says here that the book includes training plans to raise your functional threshold power. So without giving the training plan away, but some key principles or types of workouts, what are your favorite types of workouts, I guess, to use in that training plan? Is it, are you trying to lift FTP from below or training right at FTP or going at it from going harder above FTP when in as the most important workouts when you want to improve an athlete's FTP?
Yeah, so I think that there are different times in the season when you want to do a little bit of each of those things. So early on, I mean, one, we get a tremendous training benefit from riding just below your FTP. It's much more doable. You can do it for a longer period of time, and we call that area the sweet spot. So training around, let's say, 85 to 95, 88 to 93, it's somewhere in that range. You can ride there for a long period of time, and you get a lot of benefit riding there. So I like doing a lot of work there because, again, it's not on the limit. Now, there are times, though, when you need to do intervals right on the limit and at your FTP. Once you've built this nice foundation of sweet spot work, then, okay, now I really want to bump up my FTP. I want to get to that next level. Then we need to start doing work right at your FTP and above, 105% even. And those are shorter intervals, 10 minutes minimum. You got to do at least 10 minutes of work at your FTP in order to improve it. If you do it, you know, if you do 5 minutes at FTP, well, it's not really enough training stress to actually stimulate the body to improve and adapt your FTP. So we need to do 10 minutes minimum. But again, you can ride at 105% for 10 minutes solidly. So those are the times when we start to really push it as I get closer and closer to the athlete's peak. And then I start to begin to pull it up from the top by doing VO2 max work. And I think that's another place that a lot of people, especially triathletes, forget about. They get sucked into just riding at tempo all day long or doing some sweet spot intervals and never actually doing FTP intervals or doing VO2 max. But you absolutely can improve your FTP by doing VO2 max intervals and just make sure you're doing it at the right time.
Yeah, perfect. And what would be the total durations of work at intensity when you do a sweet spot workout and a typical sweet spot workout and a typical 100 to 105% FTP workout?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, like in sweet spot, I'm trying to build up to at least 3x20, if not 4x20 at sweet spot. And that's totally doable. I mean, those are doable numbers. Give yourself a little break in between each one. And that's a good thing. But when we're doing FTP work, not much more than 60 minutes at FTP is something that I really work for. And that may be 4x10 minutes. That may be 3x15. It may be 4x15. It may be 3x20, whatever it is. But I want to make sure that I'm getting a solid 60 minutes at FTP. And again, it's most likely not continuous. Okay, we're just going to go drill it for 60 minutes, which you can. I mean, if you've got a spot to do that, that's great. But if you don't, then that's okay. So it just takes a little time to get your body used to that. And there's a mental component of ORL as well, of course. You gotta be up for it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And where might you start if you're not at that level yet? Like, would you start with maybe 40 minutes of work at FTP and I don't know, 50, 60 minutes of sweet spot work before building up to those longer durations? Or where is the starting point?
Yeah, I would start with, I may even not start at 40 minutes. I might just do 2x15. 2x15 at sweet spot would be a great place to start. Then go to 2x20, and then move to 2x30. So all of a sudden now it's like, well, now you're doing 60 minutes. So I think that's a great place to be. Then from there, now it's time to move on to actually doing work at your FTP. And when you do work at your FTP, now it's okay. Well, you've done 60 minutes in your sweet spot. You surely can do 40 minutes of your FTP. But if maybe you struggle at 40 minutes, you can knock it down to 30. So 3x10 minutes, 4x10 minutes. Then I would go, once you do 4x10 minutes, then I would go to 3x15 minutes, 5 minutes more work. But again, you're right at your FTP. Now we have a guideline in the book that helps us to understand when we should stop doing intervals. And that's an important thing too, because if you do, 3x15 minutes, and let's say, for example, the first one you do 250, the second one you do 246, the third one you do 230, it's like, well, gosh, you failed on that third one. You weren't able to even reach the FTP numbers that you needed to reach. So you really should have not done that interval. Or maybe you should have just done 1x10 minutes, and you could have held around 240, 245 for that 10 minutes. So it just depends a little bit on that. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a great overview. Great to get that sort of progression. Yeah. By the way, I did 4x20 myself on Friday. We record here on a Tuesday, and last Friday I did my last really hard solid workout before a Saturday race I have coming up. So that was 4x20 at sweet spot, and it's definitely one of my absolute favorite workouts. That 4x20 minutes at sweet spot. Once you've built up to it, and you feel good, and feel that you can solidly hold there and be strong throughout the workout. That's a good place to be in. So I really like that workout as well. The next topic that I have here is you mentioned here that one of the new things in the third edition is the science behind the latest power training metric. So can you just give us an overview of what that section of the book is about?
Sure. So when we think about this data, again, we're looking at the more this power duration curve, and what that does for us is it tells us about your individual abilities. And so early on, Dr. Coggin and I recognized that the classic power training zones don't always fit everybody, especially above FTP. We found, if you just take, for example, VO2 max level 5, that is generally between 106 and 120% of FTP. That's the zone that's in the classic levels. But so if we say, okay, well, that's between 3 and 8 minutes, typically those are the kind of length of intervals that you would do. So right in the middle, 5 minutes, that's going to be right between 106 and 120, about 113, 115% of FTP. Well, we found some athletes who could do 150% for 5 minutes. And it was like, oh, wait a minute here, time out. 150%? That blows away what we had set, you know, and created in these training levels that Andy Coggan created. So that was a clear indicator that we needed to revise and look at some of these individual differences between the athletes. And so that's where this power duration curve came from. And that's where we were able to start to figure out what are these differences. And once you got those figured out, then it's like, okay, now we can start to play with some new metrics. And again, one we call functional reserve capacity. This is all of the work you can do above your FTP. So it includes a little bit of VO2 max, includes a little bit of anaerobic ability, includes a little bit of your neuromuscular power. And looking at it from a little different perspective, we've got stamina involved there. We've got Pmax, which is a little bit better than we used to look at your best 5 seconds, because now power meters are a little better. We can measure power a little bit more accurately at these short durations, and our software is a little better as well. So we can see your Pmax, which is your best wattage for one pedal revolution, both left and right legs. So those are great ones to look at as well. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some really good data in here now that's showing it makes a big difference for all kinds of athletes, and definitely, you know, that individual nature is something that you should check out.
Yeah, that's very important, I think, because absolutely, we see it all the time that you have those athletes that can go really, really hard in those shorter intervals compared to their FTP, and then some that have really struggled to hit 110% even for a 3 minute interval. So it really does vary, and those individual levels in WKO, they're called the I levels, and mm-hmm. This is again for those more advanced users, perhaps a case of considering getting WKO. It's not for everybody, of course, but it's a good tool that if you're into that kind of stuff can definitely help people. And the one thing that I will say about WKO4 that is really amazing is that it's in this day and age of software as a service, WKO4 is a one-time purchase, which I love. So it's not a monthly recurring subscription. So there's a lot of information, a lot of those things that you mentioned there as well that are available, readily available in WKO4, just automatically pulling the data from your training peaks into there and then doing those calculations, the magic in the background, and the athlete can then see and make some inference about how their training is going and what they might need to do to further their improvements.
Yep, exactly. Nope, perfect.
So let's wrap up here, because one other thing, in addition to training and racing with a power meter, actually, let's first, any final words about the book, because then I'm going to ask you about another topic that I know that you're getting into in these last couple of years. But first, to wrap up the training and racing with a power meter, third edition, tell people where they should go to get it, and if there is anything else that we missed that you want to mention about it.
Well, of course, you can get it on Amazon. That's always a good, easy place to get it. I do have about 50 more copies that have been signed by all three authors, Dr. Steve McGregor, Dr. Andy Coggan, and myself. So you can go to ShopPeaks, ShopPeaks, ShopPeaks.com, and check it out right there. And yeah, I've got like 50 more copies. So the next 50 folks who get one, they get an autograph by all three authors.
That's a big incentive to go and get them, and I just hope that I get this interview out. I have a couple scheduled already, so this will be a few weeks after we actually have the interview, but maybe there will be some left, so definitely hurry up to go and get those. And the final question that I have is, you're doing a lot of work with the Liomo Type R, which I actually talked quite a lot about with Sebastian Weber on a recent interview as well. But from your perspective, can you give us the 1 minute overview of how you use this device in your coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Type R is a great new device that measures the motion of both your foot angular range, which helps to understand how the foot moves, and also can look at what's called your dead spots, where you're not producing power. effectively, your leg angular range, your torso, and also your pelvic movement. So I look at it, I use this data, one, to help understand where is an athlete's dead spot in their pedal stroke. A lot of people, especially who are, they don't start producing power soon enough on the stroke. So maybe they start producing power at 230, so to speak, and instead they should be getting, you know, producing more effective power at 1 o'clock on the pedal stroke. So we can adjust for that. And we can also see, some fit issues as well. So remotely, very easily, I can, an athlete goes out, gets the motion analysis data. I can see a little bit about what's going on from their fit perspective. And then from the pelvic and torso data, I can see how much rocking is going on. If their hips are rocking, if their upper body's moving back and forth, if they're rotating as well. And then this helps me to quiet that and reduce some of that wasted energy. So they certainly make a difference. It's a really useful tool. And I think that we'll start to see more information from that as well.
So two quick follow-ups on that. One, how do you, if you see that an athlete starts to produce power too late in their pedal stroke, they have too big of dead spot, how do you minimize that? What's the training intervention or intervention in general that you use?
Yeah, so first off, I mean, one, the one of the biggest things that you have to do in order to change something is you have to be aware of it, right? So just bringing the awareness to the athlete that there is a problem helps to change it. Number two, if we can get an athlete to start producing power earlier, then that is really has to be with 5-minute focused practice sessions where they do 5 minutes at a time, because it's very difficult to stay focused for more than 5 minutes, especially when you're changing a habit pattern, a movement pattern. And then I have them start to visualize and use their intention to drive their knee to the handlebar. Like, see if you can actually hit your knee to your handlebar. Now, of course, you can't do this because you're attached to the pedals, but it gives you the intention of getting on the pedal stroke sooner than later. And that's one of the ways that you can really start to change that. But again, maybe you go out for a 2-hour ride and you do 5 times 5-minute practice sessions where you're not really trying to do anything but just get that leg so that it's driving over top of the pedal stroke. And that can make a difference.
Right. And then the same question for if you're rocking in the saddle, I guess the same sort of thing there, that the awareness is the one of the big things, of course. Is there anything else in addition to having the awareness that you are actually rocking in the saddle that you can do to help with that?
Yep. That's where the you can basically look at the metrics on the head unit itself and say, okay, hey, how can I quiet this upper body? And then through just that biofeedback of seeing it happen right there real time, you can start to prevent the pelvic rock and rotation and start to stabilize the pelvis a little more so that you're just focusing on the hips and leg, produce the power.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much, Hunter. We have already in your previous interview, episode 103, that we'll link to in the show notes as well, scientifictriathlon.com/TTS103. We have covered the rapid fire questions that I ask all guests, so I won't ask them this time. But one more call to action. Where should people go and follow you and the Peaks Coaching Group, social media, website, all the places where people can and should follow you? Feel free to plug them here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So check out our coaching website, peakscoachinggroup.com. We've got 50 coaches now who work here at Peaks, and they're amazing coaches all the way from beginners to, the best in the world. So any athlete we can work with, and they're of course training with power meter experts. So they know all the new metrics and all the latest and greatest things. And then if you'd like a copy of my book, check out shoppeaks.com. That's a great place to do that. Our Facebook page is peakscoachinggroup.com or Peaks Coaching Group on Facebook. My Twitter is Hunter Peaks, and same thing with my Instagram, Hunter Peaks. So check those two things out, and you'll be following us.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Hunter. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview with Hunter. As usual, you can find the show notes for it on thattriathlonshow.com. Click through to episode 184. And you'll also find in the show notes the link to the previous interview that I did with Hunter, which was training with power meters for triathletes in episode 103. And for more cycling-related episodes in general, I want to remind you that you can go to scientifictriathlon.com, go to More in the menu bar and Popular Topics, and then click Cycling. And that will open up a list of all the cycling-related episodes that I've done on the podcast so far. The next Monday episode, of course, we have a Q&A as usual on Thursday, but next Monday we will have a follow-up Q&A, like specialized Q&A on polarized training. So as you remember, if you're a regular listener, I interviewed Steven Seiler back in a couple of months ago, I guess, and that gave rise to a lot of questions. So I did a Q&A on that specific topic, and I got even more questions. So I will now do another Q&A about the topic of polarized training. And then I think that's it for that specific topic for a while. But there were quite a few questions that still weren't really covered. So I do want to revisit that topic. And that's coming out next Monday. Finally, as I talked about, I want to take the opportunity here to highlight some race successes of athletes and training plan users. And this time I want to congratulate Bruce in the UK, who used the beginner Olympic training plan as well as the strength training plan that I have, and he used the Training Peaks versions. So Bruce wrote me an email saying, "First race done over the weekend, the Marlow Olympic Distance Triathlon. I was nervous on the day and didn't feel great in my body with a lot of tightness, but the race went smoothly and I was pleased with my time of 2:49. Which put me at 67th out of 132 total finishers. I felt my pacing was good, I kept a consistent pace and was able to finish each leg strongly, getting faster in the last half of each leg. I followed your program consistently and felt like all the training went very well and was really enjoyable. I made some small alterations, like switching some of the days around because of work and other commitments, and I followed a swim program given to me by coach Julian Nagy, who you recommended me to see for video analysis, but I was swimming twice per week as per your program. The Beginner Olympic program is a fantastic training plan, and supplemented by the information on your website and podcasts, it is everything one needs to know. Thank you so much, Bruce, for the great feedback, and big congratulations on finishing your first Olympic in a really good time and a really well-executed race with those negative splits in each leg. That is fantastic work on your part, so big congratulations for that. Thank you as well to our sponsors, Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Get 20% off your entire order, whether it's wetsuits, sunglasses, goggles, swimskins, trisuits, with the promo code TTS, all caps. And thank you to Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. Get your first box or tube of electrolyte product for free with the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.